Hello, and welcome to CultPix Radio, WCPX, brought to you by CultPix, fine purveyor of classic cult and genre films since, about last year. With me, your host, Django Nudo.
I am the Smut Peddler.
And I'm Kitty Lash.
And it is our 50th episode. Yay! Cue canned applause, laughter. But no, it's a very happy milestone. And we actually made it because I think we've said that before. Most podcasts, I think, end after the 10th episode and then just die on the vine. Not us.
We are hanging in there.
Driven by passion. Driven by passion. That's what CultPix is.
So we've saved a very special topic for the 50th episode. Before we do that, however, we're going to do a slight little side detour and do an RIP, not for the Queen, but for Bo Brundin. Actually rhymes. Swedish actor. He was known perhaps best for being in Wonder Woman, the TV series, but also in The Great Waldo Pepper against Robert Redford, and on CultPix Around the World with Fanny Hill.
That's right. And may I also add that we lost Just Jekin last week, the director of Emmanuel and Gwendoline.
I think RIP, you know, ER2, because I don't care what you think about her. 70 years on the throne deserves a nod.
Sure.
And she met more film stars than, you know, you could get together in the Kodak Theater. From Marilyn Monroe to Lady Gaga. They all shook her hand and took a bow.
That's right.
Indeed.
One film star which she definitely did not mean was Herbert John Streicher.
Harry Reams.
Harry Reams.
You knew this one. Come on. So this episode is devoted to Harry Reams, and we've had a double week of his films on CultPix. Everything from his early Loop Stag films through to his glory days in the 70s and the return in the 80s. I think we counted them, and it's as many as 20 different films.
Indeed.
If we count also some of the couple of French dubs of his other films. So we're not going to talk about each and every one, but let's delve into him because I've always liked him, and I hadn't appreciated just what a eventful life of ups and downs that he had. Born in a typical Jewish family in the Bronx, was a Marine, starred in on and off Broadway productions, and his ambition was always to be an actor, a regular actor, straight actor, normal actor, and he was a good actor, funny actor. And to kick us off, I'd like to play a short clip about Harry Reams talking about acting and what it means to him, because I feel that this is what drove him a long time. So let's hear the clip of Harry Reams himself.
To say an actor is one who does westerns and not porno films is to be ridiculous. Acting is... So it's a vast art form. I mean, you can act in anything from commercials to children's shows to adult films.
Kitty Lash, was Harry the best-looking porn actor ever?
Well, I think so. I mean, in particular, if you like Tom Selleck, you know, if you like that kind of 70s vibe with the big mustache. And to be honest, it's one of these things that I think that this is why we love photography and portrait painting and film, is that the face will tell you so much about the personality. Mm. And you could see from Harry's face that he was just a fun guy, just fun, life of the party, you know, very well balanced, I think, and just easy in his own skin. And I love this quote. Now, there's a wonderful, I don't know if you mentioned the Rialto podcast.
No, but we should and we will.
Okay, I'll leave that to you. But New York Magazine interview from February the 2nd, 2005 by David Itzkoff. David, thank you. This is a brilliant interview with Harry Reams. He talks about Harry thinking himself, you know, getting into the adult film trade seriously just to try and make his $38 rent every month. This is a wonderful quote. I always thought of myself as a shy kid with lots of pimples and a big nose, but when I came back from the Marine Corps, I suddenly I got a hard body and had a different look to me. So this is the guy that's gone from sort of being very nerdy and awkward to this strapping, handsome man. And I'm thinking about when we look at female porn stars, you know, they're the ones that make all the money and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Harry really had something. You can talk about John Holmes in the same sort of breath, I suppose. But I think Harry just had a friendlier aspect to him, more accessible, as if, and speaking from a female standpoint, a heterosexual female standpoint, looking at Harry, you thought, he's a handsome guy who would actually have sex with you, which is great.
And he had that twinkle in his eye.
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't, he didn't seem insecure. And we know that neuroses is a real passion killer.
Mm. No, self-confidence and humor, double winner, plus a killer tash, which, you know, quite jealous of, I have to say. Not many mustaches. And it's funny, watching him in some of his early films and also in his late post-career without a mustache. And it just seems, I mean, he still looks great. In fact, he looks a bit like Steve Martin when he's old. I'm thinking only murders in the building. But it's a bit like seeing Weird Al Yankovic without the mustache. It's like, no, put it back on. We like you with it. That's how we always want to see you and remember you. It's just such a part of him. Now, a lot of what we've learned about him, and we should pay credit to the Rialto Report and our good friends there, who have done not one, not two, but three episodes about Harry Reams. And boy, did he have the life to deserve it. One of which is also a interview with him, which is very interesting. We're not going to play too much of that. We've got some other clips. But a lot of it was based on the book that was published in 1975, Here Comes Harry Reams, which was ghostwritten based on interviews with him. But because he had such gaps in his memory from when he was just, you know, deep, deep in the bottle, it really helped jog his memory and bring back some of the episodes in those 70s that were so crucial for him, especially post Deep Throat, which we're going to get down to. But what can we say, first of all, about the loops and shorts and stag films that we have on here?
Oh, me.
You? Oh, go on, Kitty.
Me. Okay, thank you. I wondered about these because, okay, the ones that are on Cult Picks are Volume 31 and Volume 141, and I'm thinking, how many are there? Own the whole set. Anyway, the fascinating thing, now there's a book called by Legs McNeil, that's his real name, called The Other Hollywood, The Uncensored Oral History of the Porn Film Industry. And he's talking about these loops that were sold in neighborhood shops. There were silent black and white 8mm films that had about 10 minutes or so worth of just sex. And this is a wonderful quote. Guys would go into the smoke rooms, whatever those were, and watch this stuff together to make sure they were having sex correctly. This was not an erotic exercise. And I think it's magnificent that men, unlike today when they're watching porn where they learn how to do it wrong, were actually interested in learning how to do it well. And if you watch any of these, I've watched both Bucky Beaver's Stags, Loops, and Peeps, Volume 31, and Volume 141. And I have to say, they're strangely hot. They really are. They feel new. It's I mean, even though the quality is not fabulous of the filming, it's really fun because sex still feels dirty. And I'm generally not into the dirty sex part, but it just had a frisson, I think, that's missing today.
And in tribute to Jean-Luc Godard, shot very much cinema verite style, handheld 8mm cameras up close, moving all over the place.
That's true.
Yes, as Harry said, it wasn't uncommon to see people sweating profusely when they were doing these scenes. He said you'd have a handheld camera 2 inches away from your genitals, and it's not the easiest of conditions to have a successful sexual encounter.
But isn't there also the feeling that they are underground, that it's like a little forbidden pleasure to watch them? That's kind of part of the hotness, I think.
Yes, I think absolutely, because they're not really designed for everybody. They're designed for those who seek them out.
True. Yeah.
They were shot without dialogue or synchronized sound, so there obviously isn't anything of Harry speaking in them, but we're going to play a clip from Mondo Porno, 1971, which is this hodgepodge of different sexual encounters, where it's the word from the filmmakers, you be the judge for yourself what should be labeled obscene. And of course, this is an interesting foreshadow of things to come for Harry Reams. But why don't we start out by listening to the introduction and followed by a bit of the funky psychedelic music.
You are viewing a fully developed segment of filmed activity, similar to that used in the commission study. The sexual materials could be called erotic, pornographic, obscene, or could they? Depending upon how you look at it, how you define your terms, and where you're at. For the time being, just experience it. View it, and afterward, you can consider where you are at. You'll have to judge your own response. The sexual arousal that you can comment upon after you experience each segment of the filmed activity. Couple fondling, oral genital activity, and coitus, involving a number of positions.
Should we talk a little bit about his early films from the 70s before we go back and discuss Deep Throat and everything that happened around it? So
yeah, well, I mean, I would like to say something about Mondo Porno, and I know I'm talking about his really early stuff, but I watched this and really enjoyed it. I was surprised how much I got into it, and it's Mondo Porno. I think, well, what is it going to be? Mm. You know, having sex with dead animals? But it's not. It's quite sexy. It's quite adventurous. There's a lot of variety, and I think it's a really entertaining, and also possibly erotically interesting film.
I also read about it that it actually contains a scene with male gay intercourse, which was very much taboo in the sort of straight grindhouse theaters back in the day. But they could add that on to this sort of documentary style film.
We are going to go back to Deep Throat, but my favorite of the lot is A Touch of Genie. And before we go into it, I do want to say that we need to do a big thank you to Vinegar Syndrome, who we've partnered for many, many of these films. I think we also have some something weird in there. But definitely Vinegar Syndrome. And they've done an amazing job of restoring these. And they are cracking. High definition, beautiful, colors popping. You know, Michael Cimino films don't look any better than this when they're restored. But A Touch of Genie is my favorite, especially for two reasons. It's a Joe Sarno film. And we're always happy to have more of Joe Sarno on Cult Picks, but also the humor of it. It's as if Woody Allen had directed a triple X porno film with this, schnook schlup of an antique dealer who's living a very boring life, and he sneaks off to watch porn films on 42nd Street wearing ridiculous fake nose and glasses. And then by chance, he comes across an ancient urn and he rubs one out. A genie, that is, granting him every wish. But his mother keeps getting in the way of the stooping. So
it is very, very Woody Allen-ish, and when he was funny. And I'm wondering also if this isn't a play on the I Dream of Genie television show that ran from 1965 to 70.
Must be, yeah. Which was never big in Sweden, but I've seen parts of it. I think it has a lot to do with that. Isn't even her outfit very similar?
Yes.
I believe.
Yeah. But it is a little bit. I mean, we loved it because she was so cute and adorable, and she still is. So, yeah.
So, yeah, an X-rated version of, A Dream of Genie, but with Joe Sarno, Ingmar Bergman of 42nd Street sensibilities, and Harry Reams kind of fun. And the other actors are good, too. We've definitely moved several blocks north of the kind of stag loops.
Master, I am here to heed your wishes. You have 5 wishes.
Well, I always thought 3 wishes was the standard.
That was years ago when 3 wishes went someplace. There's been inflation, you know. Well, I'm waiting, Master, to grant you the first of your wishes.
Well, wait a minute. Don't rush me. I mean, a guy can't have the responsibility of 5 wishes being pushed off on him just like that.
Yes, kind and gentle Master. I'm sorry, Master.
Just because I'm a kind and gentle master, well, don't get the idea I'm easy.
We said we weren't going to do all of the films, and we do want to move on to the Swedish ones, but are there any other of the American ones from this 70s period that you want to touch upon, Kitty?
I'm going to say Dark Dreams, 1971, Real Breasts and Real Shoes, which is, it's really astonishing because you think it's not phony, it just feels very real. Which I enjoyed a great deal. Can I talk about The Love Witch very quickly?
Please do.
Okay, right. It is quite staid, but it is Harry Reams as Alec Guinness playing these different, these sort of different characters. And it's very entertaining to watch. And also with on-screen Batman-style effects, which is wonderful. So it just goes to show up to this point how varied Harry's career was.
Very, very true. And like you said, touching upon the Alec Guinness of it, of him playing, you know, all the different characters, or Peter Sellers, circa Doctor Strangelove, it really allows him. I think that although he wasn't happy to be doing adult films, he did have a range and he did get to try different things in them, especially back in the 70s when, you know, they were shot on film, bigger production value, bigger production budget. Not that his 80s ones are bad, and some of them are quite fun too, but yeah, they're definitely in a league of their own. But we've mentioned before, and we have to go back to the film that not only made him famous, but I hadn't appreciated that gave him his name. He wasn't Harry Reams before Deep Throat, was he?
Oh, I've got, well, go ahead. I mean, because I completely avoided everything about Deep Throat up to this point, although Randy Barbato and Fenton Bailey did make a wonderful 2005 documentary called Inside Deep Throat, which is all about the making of it. But yes. Tell us more about the name.
Well, and we are going to play a clip from that documentary because it does a better job, and people should seek it out because it does tell the story of everything around it much better than we can do in a compressed form here. So the long and the short of it is that Harry went down to Florida to work on this film, not as an actor, but as a stagehand to do lighting, and the male talent didn't turn up, and so Harry got roped in to star in it opposite Linda Lovelace, and well, as they say, the rest is history. But he didn't know that he was going to be Harry Reams in it until the film came out, and he saw that because he'd been Peter Long, Dick Hurt, I looked some of his other names, Charles Lamont, Tim Long, Ned Reams, Dan Stryker, Herb Stryker, Bob Walters is a selection for you. And then when it came out, it obviously became a sensation overnight, and it broadened the audience for adult films. It's a film that couples went to see. It's, as we heard in a previous episode of the podcast, it's a film that Ingmar Bergman and the head of the Swedish Film Institute snuck into a porn theater in Stockholm to see, or rather failed to sneak in because they were recognized and taken to the front of the queue. So, but the notoriety wasn't good for Harry because it became too successful, and they decided to make an example of the makers of the film and take a stand against pornography. And a month before Nixon resigned, I think it was, he had a knock on his door.
In July of 1974, I was arrested by the FBI at my home in New York City, handcuffed, extradited to Memphis, Tennessee, first time across those state lines ever. And eventually stood trial for having conspired to transport interstate obscene materials. At the time I did the film, I signed a contract which relinquished a standard day player's contract. Mm-hmm. which is universal in the motion picture industry, relinquishing me of all my artistic rights, marketing, sales, distribution rights, and I might add the interstate transport of a motion picture is the distribution of it. So, what the government was saying, and this was a federal prosecution, United States government, was saying that actors are to be held responsible for the distribution of a motion picture, whether they have any control over the distribution or not. And in effect, what they're really saying is that any artist, whether you're an actor or a director or a sculptor or a writer, after you sell your work, just as I had signed a contract and sold my work for certain remuneration, you can be held responsible for its appearance, for where the new owner takes it, whether it's 5 years later and 4,000 miles away under the conspiracy laws, and that's what I was convicted of, conspiracy. The artist can be held responsible for its appearance in a community where it might violate the moral ethic.
Well, why not Linda Lovelace?
Well, as it turned out, Linda Lovelace was granted immunity to appear as a friendly witness for the government. She did not appear in the courtroom. When she was being served her subpoena, she went underground and did not resurface until after the trial was over. It turned out from evidence that came out in the courtroom that she had knowledge of each and every individual in the courtroom, all of the defendants. She had certain business dealings over the years. She had promoted the movie and made personal appearances and had contact and knew of each defendant's activity or role within the conspiracy. So she was a key witness for the government, as was Jerry Damiano, the producer, director, writer, editor, conceiver, the man who really manufactured the thing. He was also a key witness for the government in that he had knowledge of everyone on trial. I stood in a courtroom and was convicted of a crime along with 11 other people who I had never met before in my life.
Of conspiring with them.
Of conspiring with them, right. I think I was being used as an example, to set an example for other actors, other directors, people connected with the production angle, end of a motion picture, to not experiment with sexuality as an avenue of creativity for fear of potential jail. I now face 5 years in jail.
So he became more famous, never wanted to be, and it put a lot of stress on him. But to appeal, he obviously got a lot of support. He hired Alan Dershowitz, and he became a cause célèbre because all the actors, or Hollywood actors, appreciate that if you could become prosecuted, and Harry Reams was the only actor ever having to be prosecuted for starring in a film, then they could be in trouble too, potentially. And this is why you had people like Jack Nicholson and Warren Beatty and Shirley MacLaine and Ben Gazzara and Mike Nichols, Julie Newmar coming to his aid and fundraising for him. So it was quite the circus, and it must have been. And what I hadn't appreciated is that between his first conviction and ultimately being acquitted on the appeal, he was active in making those films, and that's when he made most of the films that he did in Sweden.
Oh.
So all of this was going on legally in the US, and he was off to Sweden to shoot three films.
Because he couldn't do it in the US at the time, or?
Well, that's what I don't know. So, but I assume it must have been a welcome change of scene from him to get away from Memphis and to Sweden, and to do films like Justine and Juliet or Bellamy.
Yeah.
Well, now those were both 1975, I think. I think Operation Wolf Cub, which is also Swedish,
it's 80s.
Is 1983.
Yeah. And the conviction was overturned 77.
Right.
Yes. So,
but also at the very same time, I think he did two other films with Joe Sarno in Germany, but also with Swedish team and Swedish actors. So he was pretty busy in Europe at that time, not only in Sweden. But shall we talk a little bit about Justine and Juliet?
Please.
Yes. This is kind of interesting because I was friends with Inge Ivarsson, the producer of the films, but he never even started talking to me about how or why Harry Reams came to Sweden. But at that point, when Sweden went from softcore to hardcore, there were quite a number of international porn stars in Sweden shooting films. So people like Eric Edwards or Darby Lloyd Raines, but also Harry Reams played against a couple of them in these two films, like Jacqueline Laurent and the Danish Anne Magle and Bent and Anne B. Warburg and the German Christa Linder. So there was a lot of international talent in Sweden at the time. But the funny thing with Justine and Juliet is that this film, as a couple of others from the time, directed by Mark Ahlberg, were all based on famous novels. And I think it was some sort of varnish, cultural varnish to like brush porn up to like, oh yeah, but this is based on a blah, blah, blah book. So Justine and Juliet is obviously two books by de Sade, Justine and Juliet. And here they are played by Marie Forsho and Anne B. Warburg. And Harry Reams, in this case, was he couldn't use his own voice because this was dubbed into Swedish. And for Swedes, this was a very, very awkward moment in film history. Because
I know what's coming.
Harry was dubbed by Ingmar Bergman actor Börje Ahlstedt, who's also very famous in the scandalous I Am Curious Yellow. But, I mean, he was a...
And Fanny and Alexander.
Yeah, a very, very, very legit actor who did all the, oh, I'm coming, blah, 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 but in Swedish. But he was also famous for doing the voice in the animated children's TV series Barba Papa, which I think was screened all over the world. I think it was French. So watching the film with his voice... It's like watching, you know, Barba Papa fuck. And that's just wrong in so many aspects. So that's a good
Has
one.
It ruined your childhood?
Lite till för ett tag. Jag är snart klar.
You mentioned the literary varnish to give it a sense of respectability, but it worked. I think I've told you this anecdote before, which is, I don't have a Harry Reams anecdote, but we were screening Justine and Juliet in London at the Horse Hospital, which is an old stable. It's wonderful, kind of underground occasional screening venue for odd film festivals. And we had Justine and Juliet on, and this very elegant woman, could have been maybe early 40s, super well-dressed, you know, very sophisticated. I'm here to see the film because I'm very interested in the works of Marquis de Sade. And so she sat down, you know, watched it and left, and I didn't see her for the rest of the festival or whatever I say. So obviously it does attract people, some people, for its particular literary pedigree. Not sure whether Guy de Maupassant had equal pulling power.
It was also a big name, and that's the other film, Bel Ami, with Harry Reams. And I think these films were very much, they came in the wake of Deep Throat because they were all for couples, and they were screened in regular cinemas, not Grindhouse or Front Store cinemas, but in regular cinemas. So Bel Ami is based by a novel by Guy de Maupassant, and fittingly enough, Harry Reams here is a born-again Christian from the magazine New Morality, and he's investigating a men's magazine very, very similar to Playboy. I think it's called even Playhouse or something in the film. And then he encounters a lot of beautiful women, and obviously he ends up, I'm spoiling here, but I think he ends up the editor-in-chief of this men's magazine instead. And it's pretty funny, yes. But it's also very similar to all of these other novels that became films, is that you can hardly recognize anything from the original story. It's like mainly the title.
But it hasn't changed. I mean, people are still doing that with films over and over and over again. One of the things that I really liked about Justine, Juliet, and Bel Ami is they're like movies, they're like real movies with sex in them. Mm-hmm. And Hollywood's been trying to do that one way or the other almost every single year, I think. There's always been playing around with ratings or how much they can show. Do we have to cut this? For example, I mean, Moore, I know we haven't talked about Moore, but 1975 reminds me a lot of Last Tango in Paris, the way it's shot. Mm. And I love Justine and Juliet. I thought he was great in it. And Bel Ami, Harry is just such a lovely looking man.
He's very
really
funny in it.
You just want to watch him. He's very funny as well, but he's also handsome. You just think, you know, he's the kind of guy you really want to date.
And they're a gorgeous look at, as you were saying, because Mike Ahlberg directed them, but obviously went on to become a cinematographer for films like Beverly Hills Cop 3 in Hollywood and Reanimator. So he had an eye for good frame and good shot and great costumes, great sets. I mean, they were as lavish as films, porn films back then would get.
Very much so. And also the team working on them was basically the exact team that worked with Ingmar Bergman at the time. So there was no difference working with high art and smut in, back in the day. Yep. It was just a job.
And shot on 35 and looking all the more beautiful for it. We haven't really gone into, or we've gone into Deep Jaws before, but that was during the Kitten Natividad season.
Right. Yeah.
But again, Harry Reams is a great addition to that. And it's, again, appropriate for him to be in it because what Kitty was saying, Hollywood tries to do that, but also the sleaze merchants try to do nudie or porn films that are funny or even in musicals. And this one actually manages to both be funny and titillating. And it's got, in addition to Harry Candy samples, obviously Kid Natividad, and worth seeking out. Again, another great title from our friends at Vinegar Syndrome.
What I liked about Deep Jaws was that it really is like the Carry On movie that you've always wanted to see. It's Carry On, but they actually get their clothes off in a slightly more significant fashion.
Which is what you want, yeah.
Yes. But oh, I mean, it's what I want goods. Anyway. Yes, absolutely. It's funny. It's amusing. It's and you know, it's, what does it say? Sex is, if you can't laugh at sex, then, you know, who are you? And I think that this is very, very important and was a surprise when I watched it. I didn't expect it.
Now, Harry, also, do we need to have a clip from any of these? Smart Peddler? More children's voiceovers? Doing a Harry?
I think that...
ruining of your childhood?
Look,
yes.
Let's do a little... let's do another clip from... a clip from Bellamy, because that is in English, so we can hear Harry's voice while shooting in Sweden.
By the way, I just wanted to say, you know that the recent iteration of Bellamy had Pattinson in it.
Oh, Robert Pattinson, yes.
Yes.
He could try a mustache.
He could try a mustache.
Harry Reams from the biopic yet to be made.
That's true.
If he remade this one, I'd definitely buy a couple tickets.
Wait, don't we know each other? Oh, yes, of course. You're George DeRoy.
Oh, Forestier. Oh, I'm sorry. That was an accident.
Sure. DeRoy. George DeRoy. Numerality. Circulation 2,300. Numerality, our worst enemy. But you're supposed to be a new wave poet.
I'm doing a piece on the decline of art into pornography.
The policy of our magazine is serious. People who call us pornographers are bigots. Let me introduce you to an old friend of mine, George DeRoy. This is Max Gordon, one of our best editors.
Pleased to meet you, George.
Oh, Charles Forestier, what are you doing in a place like this? I used to admire you.
Mr. Forestier is our editor-in-chief and cultural expert. You see, culture is what sells Playhouse.
No one buys our magazine just for the pinup photos. They all read it.
All our surveys prove it.
Now why print those disgusting pictures, then?
Harry Reams playing a dirty dick. Smut peddler. Tell us more.
He is a cop in China and Silk. I think that's what you're after.
You're right, which is in the 80s. So before we get on to that, we can wrap up by saying that Harry Reams left the porn industry after after the acquittal, but he was pretty heavily into drinking by then. And so there were a few lost years, and he came back in the 1980s when he allegedly got paid a six-figure sum to be making a return to the small screen, as was by then with VHS. He starred, including in a film which will never be seen, with Tracy Lords, so for obvious reasons. Yeah. But he did do some films which, for the 80s, again, had very high production value, and it wasn't one of those cheapy shot on videos, and yes, included him as a cop.
Yeah, so China and Silk, it's really a, you know, the story, if you exclude the sex, it sounds like your regular, you know, action movie about Lily Chang imports heroin inside fortune cookies. I love that. And then undercover cops are on their tail, and another detective gets shot, and then they call in Lieutenant Harry Parker, i.e. Harry Reams, to stop Miss Chang's crime spree. And this is, in my world, like the top cast of the 80s adult actors. The two undercover cops are played by Ginger Lynn and Herschel Savage. The fellow detective is Paul Thomas. I mean, it's a lot of the people who are synonymous with 80s porn in this film. And it's just very exciting. And this is also a completely restored version, but from Vinegar Syndrome, and it's taken from its original 16mm camera negative. So it doesn't get better than that.
Kitty, did it do it for you, or is it one yet to be enjoyed?
No, I liked it a lot. I mean, it's Harry in Cambodia. I mean, it's wonderful. It's the opening sequence is enough to make you just want to sit down and, you know, watch the rest of it. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. And again, even when he's doing drama, he just is just very, very watchable. So, yeah, I was surprised how much I liked this one as well.
And Herschel Savage, who's another favorite. I wouldn't, not quite poor man's Harry Reams, but he definitely also has that self-confidence and humor, but doesn't have the tash, doesn't quite have the same good looks. So, but still a fine porn actor.
And probably for the you know, the regular Joe, he's like the guy next door that you could identify with, and maybe Harry Reams is much too muscular and masculine to be like replacing yourself in a film that you can identify with. So Herschel Savage, I would say, is much more that type.
In terms of acting, and again, costume and drama, I think Trashy Lady, though, stands out, 1985, in terms of him getting to play, having played a, you know, Sherlock Holmes, police and so on. Now he plays gangster, and again, with Ginger Lynn. And, yeah, it's given the fact that maybe it put him off gangsters, the whole trial, and as he said in the article, when he got to go on the stand and he found out about some of these things going on behind the scenes in the porn world, because the Deep Throat was financed by gangsters who made shitloads of money from it too. They didn't sound like very nice people, but of course there's movie gangsters and then there's real life gangsters. And Harry is a good movie gangster.
And this one is kind of funny because it's sort of a reverse My Fair Lady, isn't it?
It is. So, Ginger, or Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
A reverse Pygmalion, yes.
If you, want to get old. Ginger Lynn is, he's lost his girlfriend and he needs a mole to take to the
ball
gathering of the Brotherhood convention. But Ginger is too much of a classy lady, so he got to trash her up.
Got to dumb her down. Yeah. What I liked about Trashy Lady, it's 1985, so you've got to kind of picture that. But it's lit like a really legitimate movie. I mean, it looks great. But it really reminded me of Dick Tracy. Why didn't they do a movie called Dick Tracy? And I kept expecting Madonna to just jump out behind a potted palm, but no.
It's pretty cool. But when did that Dick Tracy come out with Madonna? That was later, right? Was it around that time?
Same time as, probably slightly later. Yeah. I think it was around the time of the first Batman with Tim Burton, because I think they were trying to cash in on and failed. Ironically, the toys they made for Dick Tracy are now worth a fortune because it was such a flop. Nobody bought them, so they're incredibly rare.
It's always someone.
It's 5 years later. Yeah, 5 years later, so it was 1990.
Right, Yeah, so they were inspired by this film.
It might have inspired it.
I think so, which one came first?
Exactly,
I
mean,
So I watched Trashy Lady, let's get Warren Beatty involved.
Well, Warren supported Harry Reams when it came to the fundraising for his legal defense. So who knows what kind of associations and connections they had there.
But, yeah, you want a drink?
No, thank you. I don't drink.
Hell no, you wouldn't. You know who I am?
Yes. You're Mr. Dutch Siegel.
That's right. And what Dutch Siegel wants, he gets.
I've heard that.
How'd you like to be my girl?
What? Are you serious? Me?
That's right.
Me. Dutch Siegel's girl. Golly, Mr. Siegel, I...
Whoa. Call me Dutch, baby.
Gee, Dutch, why me?
You're a very pretty lady.
Somehow, in the middle of all this, Harry made it over back to Sweden.
That's right.
Pined for the fjords.
Was pining for the archipelago, maybe. I don't know. Yes. Yeah, this is to me the oddity of his career, but also the oddity of Joe Sarno's career. Because, I mean, Joe made almost, I think, 100 films, and they were first, basically, from, you know, late 60s, early 70s. They were very, very soft. I mean, almost not even full frontal nudity. And then he went into hardcore. And very late in his career, he decided to make an action film in Sweden called SS Operation Wolf Cub. And to my knowledge, I have to investigate this further, is I don't think it ever opened anywhere. I don't think it has been screened, as far as I know. And I happen to know also his co-star of the film, Göran, who is a complete amateur, and he was a complete amateur back then, and he never made a movie after this, and that goes for the whole cast. So it's, I don't know. And supposedly this was financed by the mob. And why they would think this was a lucrative initiative, I do not know. But the storyline is that an American mercenary, Harry Reams, comes to Stockholm. We see some beautiful views of Stockholm, especially outside the Museum of Modern Art. And you see some tingly sculptures and things like that. And then these two guys, they go to Dalarna, which is a landscape in Sweden, where they infiltrate a neo-Nazi training camp, as you do. And it's supposedly everyone speaks English, but it's very, very hard to tell from some of the extras and bit parts.
Let's take a listen to SS Operation Wolf Cub from 1983.
Shorehead! Hey, you old son of a bitch! Gee, you look great!
And you haven't changed at all since that...
Yeah, the Angola mess up. Yeah, we were lucky to get our asses out of there alive. Well, you been working?
Yep. Steve Milanesson, restaurant in Düsseldorf. My lady friend was boss.
Huh?
Yeah, I just saw brat and a kartoffel mostly. Until she booted me out. You?
I spent the last 4 years doing investigation work for some insurance agency.
Exciting, huh?
Well, soldiers of fortune have gone out of style.
Well, not completely. We have a job if you want it. See, this comrade, my father...
Could we talk now about the great non-porn role that Harry Reams didn't get, but almost got, and should have had?
May tell.
Well, again, this was in the article, but also is that in 1978, he was cast in a musical. He had earlier done other straight films, as in non-porn films. For example, he was in, obviously, Deep Throat and Devil Miss Jones is what he's known for, but he did a film called Deadly Weapons, 74, The Case of the Full Moon Murders in 73. But this one was going to be bigger than any of them. It was a adaptation by Paramount of a very successful stage musical, which was going to have big stars in the lead, and it was called Grease.
Really?
Harry Reams was going to be playing Coach Calhoun.
That would have been great.
Which, yes, up until 2 weeks before the start of shooting, when the studio got cold feet. So obviously all of that Memphis and Deep Throat and Devil and Miss Jones notoriety became too much for them. Mm. And who ended up playing Coach Calhoun instead?
Sid Caesar.
Mm. Oxford.
No comparison Ash. There. None. And, you know, this is, I think that this is a real tragedy. It also shows that it probably wouldn't happen today. He would have been cast, and he would have been properly marketed, properly handled, and properly respected, even though it is essentially a musical comedy. And I think, am I correct in thinking that this added to Harry's sort of slide into alcoholism at this point?
He was very depressed about the fact that he couldn't get a break in regular acting and I'm sure getting kicked out of a big project like this on the eve just 2 weeks before must have really been a downer.
Last week we talked about the stigma of porn actors going into legit films. And it obviously was a big thing at the time. And now, as you say, Kitty, we see some porn actors going into regular films. And it seems to be not as taboo, which is kind of weird in this woke area we're living.
Well, I think there are reasons for that. I mean, we've got John Waters, you know, and we've got Andy Warhol. We've got people that are embracing people for who they are. I mean, we've got Harry Styles, who can barely act, opening a film at the Venice Film Festival. Please take your pants off. I really think that it's revaluing the whole of the person and not pigeonholing them, which of course they've been doing with stars, whether female, male, or other. You know, that's what Hollywood does. Hollywood categorizes you, and if it's success, they want more of that success. So that's typical. And I think it means that filmmakers do take a chance, but it can be handled properly now. And also, what's wrong with having sex?
It's the big question. You can ask Mark Zuckerberg that, for instance. As I've been in Facebook jail a couple of times for female nipple images from the early 70s. Mm. But it is strange. I mean, it's the most taboo subject. Violence has never been an issue in social media or film, but nudity has. And it's odd how...
There's that amazing quote. Threatening. Do you remember when Harry and June came out? And I can't remember who said this. I should have looked it up. But they said, it's okay to chop a breast off with a sword, but you can't kiss it.
Mm. Yeah.
And I thought that's absolutely right.
And I mean, that's the whole... We shouldn't go into this, but isn't that the whole purpose of a lot of the organized religions, that sex cannot be contained? It's something you have in your genes and you really, really want it. And it's very hard to control. Very hard to control for a repressive church or government.
And that's a very good segue into the third and final act of Harry Reem's life, which is he, having gone into the pits of alcoholism, he found a way out. He found a loving wife. He moved to Utah, and he found God as well. Although he wasn't as born again as some people have implied. He was obviously born Jewish, and he converted to Christianity. And, you know, he liked to fill up the spiritual tank once a week. As he said, he bounced in between different churches before settling on one that he liked. And what I liked about it is the fact that he did say, and this was in an interview, where he talked about it, says, you know, if I didn't put God in my life, I'd be dead now. So definitely helped him with the drinking. Mm-hmm. And he also said, I'm not religious. I'm spiritual, 100%. And even when he was working as a trustee at the local United Methodist Church, he kept the name Harry Reems, although it was only one of his many stage names and the one that gave him notoriety. So it obviously didn't bother him. And he got legit work as a real estate agent. Again, we can talk about why it is that so many adult actors end their career as a real estate agent.
And producers as well. Looking back. Yeah.
That's true. Ying Ibashon, and Ona Z, all of them ended up. But he did have a late career mini revival. And he appeared on camera again in 2005 talking about himself. And Kitty, you've already mentioned the film, or rather the documentary.
Yeah, Inside Deep Throat by World of Wonder. Basically, it's Randy Barbato and Fenton Bailey are really good filmmakers and consistently showing the side of entertainment that previously was forbidden.
And it is a really good documentary, and they've literally captured everybody who was alive still back in the early 2000s to talk about the making of the film and the notoriety of the film and the afterlife of the film. And we've got a clip here where Harry Reams talks about, and other people talk about Harry Reams in the film, but above all, how he became the wacky doctor.
The really important thing was Harry Reams. I couldn't find anybody in Florida that could even come close to doing the role. So at one point I fired him off the crew and hired him as the lead. And thank God he was there, because I don't know of anybody that could have even come close to doing the job that he did as the wacky doctor.
I want to hear bells. Bombs. And dams bursting.
Harry Reams died of pancreatic cancer not long after the film, but in the article, there's a lovely, lovely finish to it in terms of Harry getting a last shot at the limelight when the film comes out and plays in Utah, not too far from where he lived, at, I think it was the Sundance Festival. Is that correct, Kitty?
Yes, I believe that is correct.
And so I think he did do a Q&A afterwards up on stage, and they had the directors and the producers and everybody there, but the only person they wanted to ask questions of was Harry Reams, who was apparently very gracious and quite open and candid about his career and his life in porn and what it was like. And it seems that he enjoyed having to get recognition as a regular actor in a non-adult film. And there's a great quote from him when they say that when the documentary was screening and Harry Reams was outside pacing around waiting for it to finish, and they thought that he was maybe a director or a nervous producer. And so he was asked by the volunteer if he's here for his movie. And he said, "Oh no, I already did my movie."
I think it really is a wonderful article. And if you are interested, after you watch the Harry Reams, all of them on Cult Picks, reread or read the New York Magazine interview by David Itzkoff, because it is a wonderfully written, beautifully researched article, and it does fill in the human side of this man that you will have seen him, you know, doing an amazing job throughout, you know, decades. And we can't really sniff at his performing chops, whether it's acting or otherwise.
Yeah. And the link to that will be in the line notes for the podcast.
But I also must say, I'm happy that he got to be involved in the reevaluation of him. It's a little bit that what's been happening the last maybe 15, 20 years, also with like people like Joe Sarno and Doris Wishman, that they have been recognized by the sort of established cultural elite, and there have been retrospectives at the Cinémathèque Française or Museum of Modern Art, and it's good for them that they see this during their lifetime and are not, you know, rediscovered afterwards.
Yeah, he did live long enough. Like I said, he died of pancreatic cancer, but it was recently his birthday last month, and Harry Reams would have been 75 if he had still been with us. So it's a shame that he didn't, but like I said, at least he got to see some of that appreciation, and it's humbling and really thrilling to be able to give this kind of talent a tiny, you know, retrospective here on Cult Picks, like we did with Uschi Degaard, like we did with Kitten Natividad. Yeah, so
definitely.
These were fine people and fine actors, as well as being adult stars.
Well, I'm not the kind of person that knows a lot about porn stars. I don't really know their names. I don't know really who directs it. I've never wanted to go down that road. But I have to say, the more I know about Harry Reams, the more I'm really appreciating this, I don't want to say underbelly of filmmaking, because it's a filmmaking of a sort, but I think the history of what he did and what he suffered and what he came through is notable and could be applied to any other kind of creative activity that wasn't recognized when it was in its heyday, I suppose. And we wouldn't have what we have today, good or bad, without him, I don't think.
And obviously, anybody interested in knowing more, we warmly recommend the Rialto Report, and we'll put the links to those things as well. But I think further to the point by you, Kitty, I'm going to go back and try to see if I can order a copy of Here Comes Harry Reams. It might have been ghostwritten, but it is based on his story as told to his ghostwriter, because the more I know about him, the more I like him. And I think that the campaign to make a biopic about the life and travails of Harry Reams, starring Robert Pattinson as the young Harry Reams and Steve Martin as the old Harry Reams, that campaign starts here.
There you go. Oh, that's a big budget.
Yeah. Great idea.
Any final words? I'd buy tickets to that. I'd definitely buy tickets to that. It's not IMAX or 3D, right? Okay.
No. Don't think he did 3D, but he would have performed, as we heard. Smut Peddler, final thoughts on the Harry Reams season on Culprits?
Yeah, I just want to thank Kitty Lash for proposing this retrospective. It's great. I wouldn't have thought it up myself, so kudos to you.
Well, you just have to think about male beauty. That's what you have to
think
about.
Yeah, I have a hard time doing that, so we really need your eye on this.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I want us all to take off our clothes and stand in front of a full-length mirror and do some appreciation. How about that for an exercise?
Like Smut Peddler said, a hard time. You've been listening to Cult Picks Radio, 50th episode, a Harry Reams special with me, your host, Django Nudo.
The Smut Peddler.
And Kitty Lash.
Goodbye.